Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, we continue our interview with original writer and thinker Geronimus. His vision, of which we sketched the outline last week, is one of eugenically selected white families living in an urban enclave, devoting themselves full-time or nearly full-time to their children's education and becoming powerful over the generations through ever-increasing intelligence and competence, and eventually retaking the levers of power in our society. When we left off last week, I was about to broach the question of overcoming the anti-discrimination mindset and statutes that our enemies have imposed on us. Listen. Well, you start with this apartment complex. You raise the kids with a new vision of community. You have a whole new generation of kids with a new tribe, a new religious vision, which has a racial aspect to it. How do you get around all of the laws that have grown up over the last 40 or 50 years that make it illegal to rent only to whites? I mean, would you somehow not call it renting? I don't know. How would you get around that?
They don't enforce that shit anymore. It's sort of an urban. You can get away with so much of that. Like, if you're not like waving swastika banners and stuff and LARPing, right? Nobody's even going to notice. You know, you're just going to like signal to the outside world, hey, we're white nationalists. No, you're just going to be beautiful, smart people participating in the world. And people are like, hey, you know, you're one of these things. And you're like, what, you know, just kind of smile and whatever, right? You act like it's no big deal. You know,
I like your optimism, but I think you better have some lawyers on staff, Geronimus.
It's not true. They're not going to come after you if you do that. You don't say, hey, we're doing the, you know, the white power compound here. No, you're just a bunch of people living in a building.
Mm-hmm.
They already have that. There's a thing called a 12 tribes cult. And they're known to be racist, and they all live together. They go, but I mean, they LARP pretty hard. I don't want to LARP like that. You know what I mean? Okay. I want to be more about, you know, futurism and, you know, math and science and technology. You know what I mean? I don't want to like look backwards. I want to look forward.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, no, I want to tell you that you don't, the worst thing is to fear that. And do it. In the reality, they would have a really hard time proving anything. Oh my, they're saying, oh my God, you people can't live together. I mean, freedom of association is pretty, you know, important, right? And freedom of religion, right? You can, I mean, are monasteries illegal? You can have a religion and a bunch of people in that same religion living in the same building, right?
I see. So you have more of an Amish profile than a racist compound profile in the community.
Right. My experience is that they're not going to mess with us as long as we're not, you know, LARPing. You know what I mean by LARPing?
Yes, live action role playing. That means wearing uniforms and pretending that you're part of the past.
Right, American History X LARPing type. You don't do that. I mean, no, you act like upper class intelligent people, speak multiple languages. You know, you're useful in the community. So you make yourself sympathetic people that they're not going to, it's going to be hard to mess with you that way. You know, that's all. That's your defense ultimately.
Somebody is going to have to be saying to some people that we no longer want you in our community, or we don't want you to begin with in our community. And that implies some sort of authority. Have you thought about how that authority would be structured and maintained?
Like Amish shunning.
So there'd be like a council of elders. I mean, I don't know that much about the Amish, but I assume they have elders who lead the community.
I don't know that we have to go into that. It would be more decentralized and casual.
Initially, the financial angel would have a lot of authority, wouldn't he?
I don't think we need to micromanage it too much.
I see. You think once the idea is there, it will just grow spontaneously if you have the right people?
I'm confident that yeah. You know, if there's some people who want to go away, they can go away. That's how the Amish do it. If you want to go away, go away. Plenty of them come back, you know? And realize, And so, I mean, it's got to be very much about free will. You can't, you know, be a control freak. You can't be like, oh, you know, I'm so afraid you're going to betray me. You'd be like, eh, you know, this is a better way to live. You can take it or leave it. You got to be alpha about it. You can't be like the guy who's like, oh, please go into the girl. Please be my girlfriend. I wish you so. No. You got the guy who is respected by women is the one who acts like he doesn't need any of them.
Yes.
And that applies not just to, you know, men and women, but that applies to humanity in general. You got to act like, you know, hey, man, if you are lucky to be in my club, and if you don't want to be in it, man, see you later. It's okay. Whatever. This thing sells itself. You don't have to be a control freak. You don't have to worry about councils of elders or anything. This sells itself. People get it intuitively what this is going to do for them once they understand what it is. Who doesn't want to be superior?
I'm very impressed with your ability to visualize possible futures that others cannot see. And I almost wonder, is it really wise for us to be talking about this on a publicly available radio show?
Oh, I know. Well, you know, you can decide whether you want to put it out there or not. I won't get mad if you don't.
I would hate to see somebody hear the radio show and then start looking for signs that this is being done somewhere and trying to squash it.
Remember the phrase, the revolution will not be televised?
Sure.
Yeah, this is not going to be televised or publicized. It's just going to happen. And it could already be happening. Well, you know what I've done? I've accomplished concretely. I have persuaded several people when I was growing, you know, I'm in my late 40s, and several people are raising their children without TV because of me. Because I was telling them all those years, don't put the kids in front of the TV. Don't put the kids in front of the TV since the 90s. And now people who heard me say that over and over again had kids and didn't put their kids in front of the TV. And now the kids are like really smart. So it's
wonderful.
Already happening. Yeah.
Yeah, you've changed the world already just with that. Do you advise them to have no television at all?
No television, none.
Not even, what about movies? No movies either?
Parents on the weekend for a couple hours, you know what I mean? Those old black and white movies, all right?
But, okay.
But as far as that, otherwise, definitely not. Have them in the middle of the living room with toys and stuff and running around outside. And children need more gregariousness. They need more social life. They need to be around more other kids, and they need less like stimulation like TV and stuff, right? So more social life and less stimulation. They're overstimulated and under socialized, right? So they're lonely and they're zoned out on video games and TV. That needs to be reversed. There would definitely be parenting classes. That's one thing. You got to follow these rules. That wouldn't be the thing. But before you join the community, you have to take these classes in parenting, right? And we have to know that you're on board, right? You have to read books and write, you know, essays on what you learned to prove you're on board with this agenda, like a college class. And you'd be able to talk about it intelligently. Show us that you're going to do this. Talk about what you're going to do, right? So that's how I would kind of introduce the control, is that you have to take a year of classes before you get into the commune.
Well, once you have the funding available and you control the disbursement of that funding, you would
Absolutely.
Have the authority to set requirements.
Right.
So you can kind of do that.
You front load the control, just like with a kid. Now, here's a very important idea of mine, is that you want to really pay attention to the. All right, there's this idea. They got it all backwards. Modern American parents have it all backwards. They're like, we're going to let the kid be an idiot till they're 18. And then we're going to send them to expensive college, and that's going to fix them completely. They're going to be college educated, and they're going to be so smart and get a great job, right? But no, you wasted the first 18 years letting that kid be a TV zombie, video game zombie. College is not going to fix them. We got to pay way more attention to the kids at the younger age, and that's why we can't send them off to daycares. Both parents got to stay home. That will make such a difference. And you got to train the parents to not have this attitude that raising my kids is boring, right? It's not. It's great. I did it, you know. I raised my daughter, and it was a lot of fun. You know, we had all kinds of adventures, and she, you know, she was a really good kid, you know, and it was great, you know. But then I had to go off to work and send her to daycare, and that was a shame, and send her to public schools, and that you know ruined everything.
Yes.
So I realized, and you know, that the one thing that could change things for the better would both parents stay home, not just the mom, but the dad too.
How does the community economically support itself?
Well, like
if
I said,
both parents are staying home.
Dude, there's billionaires out there. They could fund 50 families like this, 100 families. And how many do you need? You know, because if each of them has like 6 or 7 kids, you know, now we're talking like 300, 600 kids. And one person with the big bucks could easily fund that, you know, sort of like a universal basic income thing. Maybe we'll get a UBI, a universal basic income, and then we can, you know, and that'll kind of make it possible to form an urban commune like that.
Well, we can hope for that, and we can hope for a financial angel. But what do you do if you don't get a financial angel and we don't get universal basic income? Would you allow some kind of business to be run by the community, something that could maybe absorb not full-time but half-time of a normal work week?
A convenience store. You can have the kids doing their homeschooling in the back of the convenience store. A lot of the foreigners do that. A lot of foreigners own businesses, and they homeschool their kids or get their kids a decent education, you know, because both the parents are able to kind of stay home with the kids when you're just running a convenience store, you know. They have their kids right in the store with them, which is better than sending them to the damned public schools.
Yeah, well, there have been many studies that have shown homeschooled kids outperform public school kids by a wide margin.
Absolutely. And now, it's a shame more Americans don't own those small businesses. We really should. And so that would be another goal. That's another goal of mine, is that, you know, we take control of small businesses that are typically owned by foreigners. Now, one of the urban myths is that they get special loans and tax breaks, and I have not found that to be true. But what I did find is that when someone can flee back to their home country and not be extradited, you know, and no consequences, they will do everything possible to steal as much money as possible and cheat everybody possible. And then when finally things catch up to them, they go to their home country with their loot. They take the money and run. A lot of small businesses in America are run that way. I call it the crime dividend, the foreigner crime dividend.
Interesting. You should write an article on that subject alone.
I know.
You also should be creating a presentation, a very impressive, a four-color booklet or something that you could send to Peter Thiel and to Elon Musk and other white billionaires, just on the off chance that one of them will say, this is something I can get behind.
I already wrote to Peter Thiel. He said no.
Okay, well, don't quit with him.
We're definitely going to pay attention to the money thing. It's, money is a technical problem. Right. It's a technical and information problem. There is money to be made. Right. And there's ways to make money, and you just have to find them. And the best way to find them is. All right. So one of the things I didn't tell you about was I was in military intelligence, and it's funny. I learned a bunch of stuff while in it, and I didn't realize it until years later. And then I read a lot of spy memoirs. True spy memoirs, which are actually very useful. And this is definitely not LARPing. I mean, it's just open source information there on how to an approach to life. I recommend reading The First Directorate by Oleg Kalugin, Spy Handler by Viktor Cherkashin, all the Ostrovsky books by Way of Deception, The Other Side of Deception, and his fictional novel, The Lion of Judah, is really good. And then what was the other one? Obviously, Alan Dulles was the guy that killed JFK. He wrote the Art of Intelligence, and it's very erudite. He was a classicist. You know, he read all the Greek and Latin and stuff. And I think he knew Greek and Roman. He had an old school education, like we were talking about, like Henry Ford had. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the intelligence perspective is that information's out there, and you know, you just got to make yourself available to find it. All right, so the white nationalist movement, what we call 1.0, took the military view. Like, think of Glenn Miller, right? That's the military model.
Yes.
Of white nationalism. 2.0 says, instead of trying to be an army, let's be an intelligence agency, right? Now, if you're going to be an intelligence agency, their hardest question is, what's your raison d'etre? What's your point of you existing? What is your mission? Well, the fortunate thing is we have a mission. One of the missions is, how do you make money, right? And you devote your whole life and you take the, you know, the espionage approach to seeking out this information, right? And you know, collecting data and analyzing data and tracing down. When you find a way to make money, you know, you trace down that lead and you interview people. You do basically cultural anthropology. There's a field called cultural anthropology. You know, it's anthropology.
Sure.
Cultural anthropology is like just talking to people and get them to tell you how they live and what they do. And eventually they give you useful ideas, useful trade secrets, whatever, useful information of some sort. So the cultural anthropologist and the human intelligence case officer do very much the same thing, although with different ends. And so, you know, that is how you find out how to make money. You just do human intelligence. You meet people and you're open to meeting people and you interview them and you talk to them and they will tell you about themselves and you get information out of them, you know, and you get connections from them. They become useful to you, right? It's just kind of being open to meeting people and talking to people. And I have a pretty benign like view. Like the 1.0, right, was kind of like, we're going to have to kill people. We're going to have to do this. We're going to have to be violent, right? And I think we can just outsmart the bastards, you know? I don't really have violence in my heart so much because I think we're going to win without it. I mean, if violence is necessary, of course, you know, but I would prefer it not be. But I think that we're going to take this thing. I think they're just going to give it to us because they're going to give up. They are going to run out of wind. They're going to find that they control a civilization that is too dangerous for them to control anymore. It's too scary. You know, it's like, you know, the cartoon Mickey Mouse, the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yes.
You know, where he gets the brooms to do his work for him and the brooms get out of control.
Sure.
Okay. That's where the Jewish elites are. The brooms are getting out of control, and they're going to just want no part of it pretty soon. They're going to give up and run away.
Well, that's very optimistic. But you know what? Even if they don't hand us this civilization back on a silver platter, there's no downside to being in a community, and there's no downside to being smarter and more beautiful than everyone else.
Right, right.
And right. I guess it's similar situation that you're visualizing to the what happened to the Rus. The Rus who were descended from Norse invaders actually were asked by the people to be the rulers of Russia. So similar situation.
Right, right. Yeah, right. Because things are going to get out of control. The grid's going to go down. There's going to be like chaos. And the people who are ruling elites now are just going to be too scared to try to keep it going. It's just going to be it's going to be a force of nature that's out of their control. And the really hard men will have to take it all back and put things back in order. And there's going to be a time of troubles. Like after Ivan the Fourth, Russia died and there was chaos until the Romanov dynasty appeared in like 1608 or something. And Ivan died in 1584. So it lasted a while.
Well, I'm very impressed with your very interesting way of seeing reality and seeing possible aspects and sides of reality that other people can't see or haven't seen yet. And I'm definitely going to continue to explore your ideas that have already been put in written form on National Vanguard. And I hope we'll be hearing more from you again on American Dissident Voices sometime.
American Dissident Voices, fantastic. I remember starting to listen to them in the 90s.
Yes, we've been around for 27 years, approximately. So it's been more than a quarter century.
Since 1991?
That's correct. December of 1991.
Wow. Well, I'm honored to be on American Dissident Voices. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. You can listen to our 24/7 radio network at natall.com/radio. That's natall.com/radio. You can read our online magazine, National Vanguard, at nationalvanguard.org. That's nationalvanguard, all one word, .org. To help us do what we do, send donations to National Alliance, Box 172,
Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. That's Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. You can also donate by accessing natall.com/donate. That's natall.com/donate. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to never give up.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. Shout.